It is Friday, September 13th, 2013, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through the collective voice. The KUAF website giveaway is offering a pair of season tickets to the 2013 Walton Art Center's 10x10 series. Performances include Los Angeles guitar quartet Chucho Valdez and more. The drawing will be held Friday, September 27th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information available at KUAF.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, Foley's Van will be the first band to play next week's Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue event in Northwest Arkansas. Before they launch the annual festival, they'll play inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
And in about 7 minutes, the effects of cuts to Head Start programs in the region. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has that report.
But first, completion of the Bella Vista Bypass has hit a bump in the road. Missouri highway officials informed Arkansas highway officials this week that funding for the portion of the bypass north of the state line has come up short. But Randy Ort of the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department says the commitments are still in place for construction of the bypass, and the remaining question is when the money will come through. Until that point, Ort says construction of the full interchange near McKissick Creek will be delayed.
Until the Bella Vista Bypass is totally completed, all the way through Arkansas up to Pineville, Missouri, we don't want that traffic pattern to change. So what we are proceeding with at this point is a temporary usable connection there at McKissick Creek. In other words, just a part of the ultimate interchange. And we're going to continue with the initial two-lane construction over to match up with what is already under construction right now around Hiawassee up to County Road 34. We're also not going to proceed north from County Road 34 until we get a timing commitment from Missouri.
Ort says part of Missouri's funding is still allocated to the project, but Missouri highway officials opted against a partial construction in favor of building all of the stretch at once.
With the terrain up there, the type of work that they're going to be doing, they are not going to proceed with just a partial contract or anything like that. They want to wait till they have full funding. We will be in constant contact with them. Again, we've been partners on this project for many, many years. There was a time when we had the funding, we're ready to proceed, and Missouri did not. And then Missouri got a revenue increase up there, and then they were ready to proceed, but we were not at that point in time. And now we're back to we have the money, and they don't have full funding.
Ort says the $100 million allocated for the two lanes of the Arkansas stretch of the bypass will remain allocated to the project. However, Ort says the highway commissioners this week discussed building all four lanes of the bypass within the time frame initially allocated for construction of only two lanes, a project he says would cost an additional $51 million.
Bentonville-based Walmart is touting its progress on its sustainability initiatives. Yesterday, the retailer held its annual Global Sustainability Milestone meeting and presented 9 initiatives that have raised the company's overall sustainability index reading by 12% in the past year. The index, which has been in place since 2009 and developed in conjunction with the Sustainability Consortium, measures the environmental impact of products. And last year, the company established guidelines for 100 categories. According to Talk Business Arkansas, officials with the company said its general merchandise department has improved its index product sustainability score by an average of 20%. And grocery items have moved the sustainability needle about 12%. Moving forward, the company pledged to facilitate more recycling through smarter packaging in its supply chain, which they hope will prevent more than 29 million tons of plastics from being sent to landfills annually at a cost of about $6.6 billion.
180 fire departments in 5 states have been awarded a collective $28 million in FEMA preparedness grants this year. Rogers Fire Department was among the awardees, receiving a $549,000 grant to help increase the number of trained frontline firefighters in the community. The award is the second highest amount given in the round of grants issued to 2 departments in the FEMA Region 6, which includes Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas.
The University of Arkansas Community Design Center has received 3 awards from the Arkansas chapter of the American Planning Association. Projects receiving awards include the Creative Corridor Main Street Revitalization and Petaway Neighborhood Revitalization projects in Little Rock, each receiving an award for achievement in urban design, and the Fayetteville 2030 Transit City Scenario Plan received an award for unique contribution to planning.
The University of Arkansas has hired a new compliance officer for the university's Office of Equal Opportunity and Compliance. The university announced this morning that Shannon Haupt, an Oklahoma City attorney with 12 years of human resources and employment law experience, has been selected to fill that role. She'll be responsible for overseeing the complaint and grievance process for the campus community and will serve as the university's Title IX and Americans with Disabilities Act coordinator.
Clear tonight with lows from 50 in northwest Arkansas to 60 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, sunny with highs from the lower to mid-80s. And tomorrow night, mostly clear with lows from 51 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 58 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large for a September 13th. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Michael Tilley. He is the editor-publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, and so much more for the entire region. How are you on this Friday the 13th?
I'm well, even with it being Friday the 13th.
Stay out from under ladders. That's my advice.
All right.
Not just today, any day.
I started to say, that's good advice for any time.
Let's see. Let's start with something that we knew was going to happen. It represents a change for the Fort Smith region, and that is the first 2 A-10 warthogs have left the area.
Right, and it came, I have to admit, this came as a little bit of a surprise to me. You know, the 188 said they would begin the drawdown this month, but, you know, you don't, I guess I didn't think about, well, they've got to cycle those planes out at some point, and so that started now, but two will leave, 2 more will leave in October, and I think 2 are set to leave almost each month until next June, or July, I think it is. But it's kind of a bittersweet thing because planes aren't coming back, at least not with the next mission. I mean, who knows what the future will hold, but, you know, this next mission is going to be, they're essentially converting to these A-10, these Warthogs, to what's going to be a remotely piloted aircraft mission. They don't like anymore when you say drone mission, but and they're also intelligence. You know, they're going to move an intelligence unit up from the 123rd Intelligence Squadron up from Little Rock Air Force Base to Fort Smith. So we're seeing the planes leave. The good side is that we're not going to see a lot of job losses, according to what the Air Force is telling us.
A job loss total of about 17.
Right, that's what it looks like. And so let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope that's the case. But there are some things, though, that we will lose. I mean, I think there'll be some taxable sales that those A-10s suck up a lot of jet fuel out there. And they're going, you know, they require more maintenance, more money. But since we won't have planes, those type of sales won't happen. But at least we'll have that payroll impact that will remain.
Well, speaking of figures, it was kind of a week with some ups and some downs in numbers. Let's start with tourism in the Fort Smith region, year to year down in the summer.
Right, it is down, and it's continued a trend. And we kept, the tourism folks were telling us that they were hoping that would shift through the summer as more people travel. But what we're seeing is, according to what we're hearing from them, is that people are still traveling. You know, the vacation traveler and the business traveler, they're still traveling, but they're just spending less.
Yes, to that point, hotel numbers are slightly up.
Yes, and in Van Buren, the hotel traffic was up about almost 4% in terms of receipts. Now, some of that's going to be a function of hotel rates could change. But at 4%, you know, you have to think that's not all a price differential. But, you know, Merrill Keith at the Van Buren A&P says that they're hearing anecdotal evidence. You know, restaurants say
you know, people may still come in. They may still have the same traffic, but people won't get the appetizers. Or instead of the steak, they'll get, you know, a chicken dinner or something. So we're seeing, you know, there's still some pressure on the consumer, both in Arkansas and nationwide. And, we've seen that even in sales tax collections in Fort Smith. So it's a reflection of the overall economy, but although in northwest Arkansas, the past, we don't have the current numbers, but there are double-digit gains in some cities in northwest Arkansas.
What I thought was really interesting, drilling it down into this story that's on thecitywire.com right now, is that the amount of money being spent on food items at gas stations and convenience stores by travelers is going up. So some people are spending, getting, you know, snacks, I guess, to carry them over.
Right, and you know, as we've talked before, these gas stations anymore, they're not the gas stations, Kyle, that you and I grew up with. You know, these are, you can get milk, you can almost get a pretty good list of groceries knocked out at a gas station anymore. Some of these, like Come and Go and Casey's and these things, and so I think that's a function. And you know, if you're with a family and you're trying to make time and trying to keep everybody gathered up, you know, you stop, get gas. If you can get something to eat on the go that's decent food, then that, you know, that's an attractive option.
Interesting. If you have a capital campaign and you want to raise $50 million and you come out with nearly $57 million, I would call that a success.
Yes, they had a success. The campaign went a little bit longer than what they had hoped, but still, you know, another $7 million. Nobody's I don't think anybody's going to look sideways at that. And,
we're talking, you know, about UAFS, of course.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, University of Arkansas, their foundation raised, as part of their Giving Opportunity campaign, raised $56.89 million. Let's just call it $57 million. But, you know, Neil Pendergraft, who was one of the campaign chairmen, he pointed out that, you know, we raised this money and went almost, you know, 14% over the goal in what was very tough economic, and continues to be tough economic times for the Fort Smith area. So they had a celebration this week, very pleased with it. And, you know, they have a lot of scholarships. It's going to be a lot of student support. I think $27 million, $28 million, I forget the exact number, will go to some endowed scholarship funds, and a little over $5 million to some endowed chairs and professorships. So it's good support for this university. And, you know, and I think sometimes it's good to remind ourselves that, you know, this hasn't been a university for that long. I mean, so they have, I was out there for this event. It was nice to see transformation. They have almost 1,000 students now living on campus, and I know folks in Northwest Arkansas may scoff at that, but for a university that's just been around for a few years, it's quite a shift. And it's good to see that youthful, energetic activity kind of in that UAFS enclave.
Did you say 1,000 living on campus?
Roughly 1,000. That's what Sandra Lamar with University told me.
That's quite an increase over just a few years ago.
Yes, it is. You know, they've built several dorm facilities just in the past 2 years, 2 to 3 years, have added some facilities and enlarged student dining, and they have a campus center, and they have a 24-hour, in their new library, have a 24-hour center where you can work on computers and have printer access and all kinds of things around the clock. So it's interesting to drive by. I've had to leave Fort Smith sometimes late, early in the morning, and you can see that room at the library, and it's kind of like a beacon there on the campus. It's all lit up. So.
Finally, home sales numbers out again updated, and it's positive for the entire region.
Right. But even finally, Fort Smith is showing some good year-over-year numbers, which is a good sign for folks who've been watching the Fort Smith regional economy and wondering if it's going to turn around. But, yeah, the CityWire's, the Arkansas Home Sales Report, we look at data from the 14 most populated counties. It reflects about 70%, 75% of total home sales. And in the four markets, the home sales are up almost 12% in the first 7 months of 2012 compared to last year. And in those areas, in central Arkansas, it's up almost 10%, up almost 13% in Jonesboro, up over 15% in northwest Arkansas, and up a little over 3% in the Fort Smith area. So the home sales market, the real estate market in Arkansas and in the four major areas is healthy, and it looks like it's going to continue to be healthy, even with concerns about interest rates, should be healthy for the rest of the year.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Have a good weekend.
All right, and go Hogs.
All right, Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and much more for the entire region. Have a good weekend.
Yes, sir.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night beginning at 10 p.m. On the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I will once again feature some music from Spyro Gyra, the band that will be performing as part of Jazz Eureka Weekend on Saturday. We'll also hear from John Patitucci, Finus Newborn Jr., Duke Ellington, Kenny Garrett, Trombone Shorty, and much more. Tune in this Friday at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
Head Start, the historic American preschool program, is caught up in the federal budget sequester with forced closures of centers across the country, including in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
The fiscal cliff, remember it? To keep the nation from going over the financial edge, pushed by spiraling debt, Congress and the Obama administration settled on cutting, over the next decade, $1.2 trillion. An automatic government-wide military and domestic spending starting March 1st. And here's one place that's been sequestered. Willow Heights Head Start, a free preschool for impoverished kids, located in Fayetteville's historic Black District. The playground's empty. No more squeals and shrieks. Cutting funding to Head Start is counterintuitive, says Brenda Zedlitz, Child Services Director at the Economic Opportunity Agency of Washington County, which runs the Head Start here.
We who are working over here with children who are 3 and 4 years old, we have a huge job to get those children ready at age 5 to go into kindergarten so that they are absolutely ready to be excelling in reading by the time they get to third grade, and the reading levels go through the roof. Because we can either put money in at the end, we can, you know, front load it with early child education, or we can back load it with prison beds.
A blunt choice to say the least. Data show that the achievement gap between low-income and middle-income families can easily be bridged if children receive comprehensive early childhood education. Head Start in Arkansas is administered by 22 regional agencies, which serve 11,000 children in more than 600 classrooms. That includes early Head Start for impoverished infants, toddlers, pregnant women, and their families.
With the push now on early child education, by the time you go to kindergarten, you need to already be at the very cusp of knowing how to read or reading, because from kindergarten to third grade, you learn to read. From third grade on, you're reading to learn. And so it's very important that children have the opportunity to be ready for kindergarten or school readiness. For children who are low income, research shows us that there is a 35 million word gap in word recognition and words that they have heard when they're 5 years old, as opposed to children from middle and upper income families. So what we're trying to do is reduce that achievement gap so that children from these lower income families hear more words, they're read to, that the parents understand about that gap and how they can reduce that achievement gap. It doesn't cost any money, just reading to your child every night, being involved with your child's education.
Washington County had 9 Head Start centers. Brenda Zedlitz, along with her board and policy council, were forced to choose one to close.
Our other centers were densely populated by families who lived around them. Consistent enrollment, consistent attendance, you know, they were there for the year. It was just that, you know, which center was showing the most instability regarding access by the families. You know, our families have transportation issues. They don't need to drive far stretches to get their kids in Head Start.
The Willow Heights Center now operates as a training facility for parents and staff. Head Start staff coordinate safety, healthcare, nutrition assistance, family and community involvement, disabilities, and mental health care services, all in compliance with 2,200 regulations, and every Head Start is charged with helping low-income children cultivate social and emotional competence. In other words, to respond and cooperate with their peers and grown-ups.
Children, when they don't understand, they're afraid or upset or extremely happy or extremely sad, their behavior becomes out of control, a little extreme. So what we try to do is, you know, work with these families and these children to help them self-regulate and help the parents help their children to regulate their behavior. So when they go to school, to the big world, we call it, which is kindergarten, they already know how to take care of all those issues. They know how to express their feelings appropriately. They know how to communicate. They know how to use their words instead of their fists or their feet.
And the program is popular. Washington County Head Start has a waiting list of more than 400 children. So where did the 66 children enrolled at Willow Heights go?
Very good question. I hope they went to the public school pre-K program.
Not possible. By the time the sequester cuts were announced, it was too late to enroll the children here. This is a Fayetteville Public School District pre-K classroom at Owl Creek. And this is the woman in charge.
I'm Kathleen Shannon O'Brien Hale. I'm involved in early childhood education because it's a passion. The classroom is intentionally arranged and divided into various learning centers. The area by the carpet has our word wall, it has our weather, our school family jobs. We use conscious discipline as a social emotional system. And the teachers are circulating throughout the room using open-ended questions to prompt children to explore and learn through play.
Of the 120 children enrolled in this pre-K program, all but two qualify for free or reduced lunch. And the pre-K program is expanding slowly because funding is limited based on competitive grant making. Kathleen Hale devotes part of her time writing proposals. Well-off children have the option to attend private preschool, but financially strapped ones can now also enroll in public pre-K. Six classrooms are located at five elementary schools, 20 children per class. It used to be called nursery school. They differ greatly from daycare, being an instructive setting. Did you know public school pre-K programs had their start in Head Start? Head Start was established in 1965 as part of President Lyndon Johnson's now historic war on poverty. So when Kathleen Hale learned the program was being sequestered here in Fayetteville,
it's really tragic for the community. The big difference is that Head Start is federally funded, and the federal poverty guidelines are half that of the state poverty guideline. So the population that is served with Head Start are actually more at risk in terms of financial issues than the state-funded pre-K programs.
This is all about low-income children who have less learning opportunities at home.
Many times, one of the big differences is lack of exposure to books and lack of exposure to vocabulary that is more complex and varied. In a situation where you're wondering how you're going to pay the rent and where the next meal is coming from, there isn't a lot of leeway to do the more luxurious things in life. And it's a struggle, and the economy has been difficult, and many people are in a survival mode. So when children come to a preschool program, they're able to be exposed to a lot of books and meaningful activities that their parents just simply don't have the resources to provide for them.
Kathleen Hales operated the pre-K program here for the past 6 years. Previous to that, she spent a decade working for Head Start. The Head Start program is administered by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and since its inception, it's served more than 30 million children. In 2012, Head Start was funded to serve nearly 1 million children across the nation through a nearly $8 billion appropriation. A reported $400 million reduction is resulting in 57,000 children being barred from enrolling, the largest program intrusion in the agency's history. But Washington County Head Start Director Brenda Zetlitz, who is also tasked with raising matching funds annually, is not deterred.
Low-income families sometimes suffer a lot of instability, you know, job instability, housing instability, food insecurity, disruption in caregivers. If mom and dad are working and they have a parade of caregivers to try to keep the children safe while they keep their jobs, there can be a lot of disruptions. So we try to keep our centers as stable as possible.
The sequester has also taken $1.2 million from after-school programs. $4 million has been deleted from Meals on Wheels. Thousands of emergency first responders have been laid off, along with 30,000 public education instructor and staff. That's just to name a few. Progressives say the sequester would not be so brutal if Congress had agreed to raising taxes on America's wealthy. But doing that, conservatives say, would provide less economic stimulus for all of us. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Friday, September 13th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Well, as Kyle just pointed out, it's Friday the 13th.
Yes, it is.
And if that worries you, you might have...
Frigatriskaidekaphobia.
That means fear of Friday the 13th. Based on the Norse goddess Frigga, who's associated with Friday, and Triskaidekaphobia, which is fear of the number 13.
And then there's always the guy in the hockey mask.
Right.
Yes. Oh, dear Lord.
I do have fear of Jason, but that's a whole other thing. So let's try these suggestions for good luck while Antoinette giggles because she got it. If it's bad luck when a black cat crosses your path, it must surely be good luck when a red razorback crosses your path.
Unless you're an opponent, I suppose.
So, there will be hogs in abundance out tonight when country musician Justin Moore performs free for fans in Lot 56 at the university.
And this is for everybody, not just university students.
And for everybody, not just Razorback fans. You can just go to hear Justin Moore.
Right.
He is from Poyen. I don't
right.
have a clue where that is.
One of the few. Not many people from Poyen.
Do you have a clue where that is?
It's in the northeast. No,
over
southeast.
Over around Little Rock somewhere.
Yeah.
And he's a huge... hog fan, says a concert makes a good excuse to attend a Razorback game. He's also talking about his third album, Off the Beaten Path, which comes out on Tuesday. And he's launching a headlining tour on November 1st, which includes a stop at the Fort Smith Convention Center on November 3rd. So, the concert starts at 7 p.m. Good luck finding a place to park.
But he's supposed to be around later to sign autographs
yes.
and such?
Yes. And if you need help finding a place to park, go to parking.uark.edu.
All right.
So if it's good luck when you find a penny and pick it up.
Yes.
Then it must be great luck to see an art installation about a man named Coin, right?
Nice. Yes.
Even if he sort of had his own bad luck?
Yeah, he did kind of have his own bad luck.
Made his own bad luck.
We're talking about Coin Harvey. But a very cool installation by Dayton Castleman, who lives in Bentonville, and he has become fascinated, a word he uses a lot when he's talking about Coin Harvey, and he's created his own version of the Montanay Amphitheater, complete with a slightly smaller couch modeled after the 12-foot concrete original. He borrowed the one the Rogers Historical Museum made for their exhibit. So you can sit on the couch, and you can watch slides of Coin Harvey's financial writings projected onto this installation, which is lighted from behind. But only from the couch do they make any sense. If you move around the room, the projection breaks up. So you can only understand it if you see it from Coin Harvey's perspective, as it were.
Interesting.
It's on show through October 4th at ACO. It's free, and there are some prints available based on the original drawings for the amphitheater and the pyramid.
The thing about these ACO shows is they're up and they're gone in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a month. So if you hear this and you want to go, remember.
Don't fool around. And they're open Saturday from 9 to 3. And if bad luck comes in threes.
Okay.
Certainly good luck must come in threes.
Yes.
So, well, you know, because I like theater, here's three things you should see.
Not a stretch at all.
The Never-Ending Story is on at Arts Live Theater. Adorable. There's no great big luck dragon puppet.
I asked about that. That was one of the first things I asked about.
Then no. But there's a really cool kid playing the luck dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a great show. So much fun. It's at 7 tonight, 2 and 7 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday, one weekend only.
So Sunday is the final performance of The Never-Ending Story.
That means it ended.
Exactly.
Oh, Lord.
And tickets are $6 to $8, so what a deal. The Wizard of Oz is on stage this weekend at Rogers Little Theater.
On stage and above the stage.
Above the stage, complete with flying monkeys and melting witches and a dog and a lion and a scarecrow. You know the script. 8 o'clock today and Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday. Tickets are $10 to $17 for the balcony and $48 with a ton of dinner. And Julius Caesar is not on stage, but in the park at 2 o'clock on Sunday. Presented by Classical Edge Theater, Justin Schauer cut the script and promises it comes in at 75 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So, unlike Shakespeare in the good old days of Shakespeare, you won't be there all afternoon. And it is free.
All right.
So may the odds be ever in your favor.
There you go. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Support for KUAF comes from Pack Rat Outdoor Center, kicking off its third season of Pint Night Wednesday, September 18th from 5:30 until 8 at 209 West Sunbridge in Fayetteville. Refreshments will be furnished by Jose's Mexican Restaurant, and beer sales will benefit Ozark Off-Road Cyclists. More information available on the web at packratoc.com. Season tickets are available to the Fort Smith Symphony Special 2013-2014 90th Anniversary Concert Season. Works by Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky, Mozart, Beethoven, and Wagner highlight the season, as well as an evening with the Canadian Brass. Tickets and more information available at 452-7575 or fortsmithsymphony.org.
The Eureka Springs Original Ozark Folk Festival presents a live recording of Michael Jonathan's Woodsong's Old Time Radio Hour, Saturday, October 26th in the City Auditorium. Submissions are now being accepted for local talent to perform during this worldwide broadcast. Entries must be received by September 15th. Information is available online at ozarkfolkfestival.com.
So that's Sunday. If
yes.
you're going to apply, you get
better
gear.
Get on that.
That's right. Six entrepreneurial teams are in the semifinals for the most recent edition of the NWA Startup Cup. The cup features several competitive entrepreneurs who pitch ideas for would-be startup companies. Each competitor is teamed with a mentor who helps modify the business plan and product. The six teams will be reduced to three in November. The eventual winner will be named November 20th and could receive additional support, including funding for their business. Among the six semifinalists announced yesterday, a company that has designed what it says is a better light bulb cover for outdoor lighting, a firm with a plan to produce items to allow for safer storage of firearms in the home, a publishing interest that wants to produce the Black Business Directory of Northwest Arkansas, and a business that would specialize in helping senior citizens downsize and relocate.
The Center for Lifelong Learning at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith will offer a diverse set of nearly 40 courses, workshops, and trips next month. The courses include yoga and foreign languages, and the trips include destinations across the country and around the world. In addition, the Center for Business and Professional Development at UAFS will also offer classes next month, including courses about using social media and commercial driving training sessions. You can learn more at uafs.edu.
Speaking of driving, Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan will mark Thursday as Drive for Pledges Day as part of the It Can Wait project. That movement is an effort to remind drivers they can wait to send a text message until they're done driving. The mayor, along with other officials from the city and Washington County, will speak at the Fayetteville Farmers Market at noon Thursday. Fayetteville is one of many cities officially participating in a campaign to discourage driving and texting. The National Safety Council says about 100,000 car accidents a year are a result of driving and texting, and a study by AT&T found that 75% of teens say driving and texting is common among their peers. You can learn more at itcanwait.com.
You can add another locally produced film festival to the growing calendar of film-related events in the region. The first ever Eureka Springs Winter Film Festival is scheduled for January at the City Auditorium. The festival is accepting digital format movies from 5 to 30 minutes in length in five different categories. The festival is under the direction of Teresa DeVito, and the deadline to submit a film for consideration is December 31st. There is a $25 entry fee. The festival will be from January 23rd through the 25th and will include a Saturday matinee intended for younger audiences. And you can learn more at EurekaSpringsWinterFilmFest.com.
More films. University of Arkansas students will premiere their films September 30th at the Walker Community Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. A chance to meet the filmmakers at 5 that evening. Movies then screen from 5:30 until 7:30. Subject of the films include a documentary about Block Street businesses and one about Oak Park Cemetery. Screenings are free and open to the public.
And I've seen one of those, so you guys should go check them out.
Which one have you seen?
The one about Oak Park Cemetery.
Really?
I have.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I think you'd like it.
Okay.
It has a good ending.
Oh.
Kind of a surprise ending.
So it's a documentary about cemeteries with a surprise ending.
Yeah.
I am totally intrigued now.
All right.
Excellent.
Okay.
That's a Monday, by the way, the 30th.
It is.
Yeah.
And some sports real quick. The number 25-ranked Arkansas Razorback soccer team will be on the road for two matches this weekend, today at Utah State and Sunday afternoon at TCU. Arkansas is 6-0 and has only trailed for 14 minutes, and that's out of 565 minutes played this year. The TCU match Sunday will be seen on Fox Sports Southwest.
The Arkansas volleyball team in Tulsa this weekend to participate in the Golden Hurricane Classic. They'll meet Tulsa tonight. The volleyball matches can be heard on KXUA 88.3 FM in Fayetteville.
Perfect.
Yeah, the volleyball team 4-2 so far this year.
I like it. In 2014, the Arkansas gymnastics team will meet 5 of the 6 teams that made it to the last NCAA Super 6 championships. The 2014 schedule was announced this week and includes 6 home matches, and the NCAA regionals will be in Fayetteville on April 5th.
And quickly, I'll tell you that there are all kinds of college athletic opportunities for you to watch this weekend in the area. John Brown University's women's soccer team is hosting the annual JBU Invitational. Last match of the weekend, JBU facing Grace University from Indiana, 2 tomorrow afternoon in Siloam. The men's team at JBU will host Mid-America Nazarene tomorrow afternoon at 4. The University of Ozark soccer team, both of them, will host Williams Baptist tomorrow. The men take the pitch at 1 in Clarksville. The women's game is at 3. And the UAFS volleyball team hosts Williams Baptist tomorrow at noon on the UAFS campus in Fort Smith.
It's a sonic document of a moment in time, and you listen to it back, and it really brings you back to that place. That time might seem a little blurry, but you remember the feeling of being there.
The surviving members of Nirvana discuss the making of In Utero, the group's last studio album, during All Songs Considered, Saturday at 3 p.m. on KUAF.
Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old. I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river.
Motivational speaker Matt Foley was one of Chris Farley's most memorable characters during his time as a cast member on Saturday Night Live. The character's less than perfect living arrangements inspired the name for the local band Foley's Van. The group will kick off music on the main stage at Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue next Wednesday during Country and Roots Night. Foley's Van is comprised of Melissa Schock, Alan Swearingen, Patrick Calloway, Patty Steele, Chris Cravella, and Christian Jerry. Last week, all 6 band members paid a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, they explained while they don't have a van, they are working on it, as well as saving enough money for some studio time. While they don't have a full-length album yet, Alan said they have recorded some songs.
We've got a demo, 6 songs, mm-hmm. 7 songs, something like that, that we're doing for donations, but...
kind of a living room recording.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah,
it was just done in our apartment.
It was a single mic condenser.
Yep.
And we had to stepped in and stepped out when it was our goes. And
it sounds really good for that, for what it is, though.
Yeah.
So you have this living room demo, as you call it, and yeah. You said that you use just a single condenser mic. Is that how you guys prefer to perform, or do you guys all prefer when you're live to have She's shaking her head.
We like to plug in. Just because we can, you know, we can level everything out. It's fun.
And
for sure.
Psychedelic.
And we like to mix it up. We do play bluegrass, and I feel like that's like a rock that we kind of hold on to.
Yeah.
But we love all kinds of music, and we like to incorporate all kinds of music.
I think we played just out of the box. I have no idea where it came from. We played Prince the other day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was awesome. I sang with you.
Everybody in Mojo's was up and dancing.
I was dancing.
Song.
I had no idea we were about to do that.
I think that's the funnest thing is taking other songs that we all like and just
changing
putting
it up.
A driving beat behind it and calling it our bluegrass style.
I really think of us
call
more
it bluegrass,
jamgrass than
jamgrass, yeah. Bluegrass.
Because Bill Monroe would not be happy with what we're doing. But, you know, Bill Monroe wasn't happy with Flattin' Scruggs. So hey, what do you do?
Earl Scruggs would love it. So
he'd love it. You're right.
Earl's a man.
We're the new grass.
Well, and the coolest thing is, I mean, we've got all this music. Tradition. We have the bluegrass instruments. We have the mandolin, the banjo, the upright bass. Every once in a while, harmonica, the spoons, washboard,
clarinet.
The clarinet. She plays the clarinet as well. And so it's just fun to take those instruments, and it just brings a completely different sound to it. Yeah. It's fun.
On your website, you say bluegrass, but not your mom paws. So what do you mean by that?
We like to put a new spin on it, I think. I mean, there's bluegrass. A lot of people say that bluegrass has already happened. You know, it's the old stuff. It's Bill Monroe, you know, Lester Flatt, and then Earl Scruggs and all that stuff. We just like to put a new spin on it. Like, we take stuff that you might hear every day, and we just put it to a different style. I don't know. We've added a few different things, elements like drums, the bass drum.
I think the songs that we've been writing and stuff are not traditional style songs.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
They're probably. If you sat down in a studio and added some synthesizers and things, it would probably be a really good pop song. It would be some mainstream.
Well,
pop
no,
music,
I really think it would. It's definitely a modern.
And so what we've been able to do is incorporate that style.
How many songs do you guys have written? Because I know you're working on getting a van, but you're also working on getting money for studio time to record an album.
We have songs pieced together.
I mean, we've got a good.
10, 12
songs. I mean, a good album's worth. Some of them are not finished for sure.
The
you know, they're always in the making, tweaking.
Well, even after we, change. You know, even after we write them, we'll perform them like 12 times or so. You know, through, you know, go to different states, and it will morph into a different thing.
And we don't record that much. And I think we all really enjoy live music. And I feel like that's what live music is. It's not the same song every time you play it, because more or less we have. Kind of the same set that we do, but I don't think it's ever really played the same way.
Never.
No. Well, experimental music for you people.
Experimental bluegrass.
There you go.
So it's
what's really a privilege is that everyone is able to, you know, they have pretty good social intelligence, so they're really able to read the crowd really well. So, I mean, we could tell, like, we have these little huddles, and we've been better about, you know, keeping them to the 5-second rule, but we've got this unsaid thing. We'll call out a song without a set list or anything, and we'll annex it or amend it. We'll be like, no, we're going to play this one, and then somebody will say this one, and we're like, yeah, that's the call. Let's do it now.
And they don't always remember to tell the whole band that they've decided.
Especially
to
the
do
newbies. the two newbies.
You just kind of got to learn to go on the fly.
You haven't tapped in. We've got like a wavelength, a mental wavelength.
But it's really zen because you got to learn not to focus. Don't focus on what they just said.
Right.
Focus on
it
what's
always
about
changes.
To get done. I'm not saying I get involved. The more I'm with you guys, the more I make you guys get over there and get me into that. But it's real zen that way and when we're playing too, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, I don't know which way we're going to go with that. And a lot of times you will hold stuff off longer if somebody's really ripping some killer riffs.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We'll keep going and get way more experimental, way more instrumental with parts of it.
For me, because I've only been like more of the new addition, but my favorite. Like, we've had a few shows since I joined. My first, like, full where I played the entire set was in Eureka, and it wasn't said that I was going to play the full set. We discussed it. Me and Alan said, well, maybe, you know, just bring everything, because I have multiple instruments I play.
She has a suitcase.
Yeah, I do. I literally have a suitcase of instruments. And so I brought them all and set up, and then, Chris had no idea that I was going to play the whole set, because I didn't even know. But that's what happened, and it was magical. Like, and so then the second time we played at JJ's, that crowd was insane.
Yeah. JJ's is always a good time.
Oh, my gosh. I just...
They energized me to where I was playing Washboard like I'd never played before. Like, I did not know who that girl was on stage. Like, that was insane.
I'm playing
night.
Spoons on everybody.
Yeah, our
that
crowd.
Was fun. Yeah.
Our
fun.
Crowd that comes out and watches us are awesome.
Oh,
they
my
are
goodness.
So awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I don't have to drink coffee or an energy drink. I just get up there and they just
energize you.
But you go ahead and do that. Every
time. Yeah.
Maybe sometimes.
And it helps, too, that. Like, you know, that the band as a whole really connects that way. For me, playing on stage is definitely a crowd interaction. I do Absolutely. Better when there's participation from the crowd, even if it's just like, you know, a nodding of the head.
For
just
sure.
anything to give
it's
you
a,
that.
It's a show. I mean, yeah. it's mm-hmm. we're. I think we're all very...
Showmen.
Exactly, showmen. I mean, we're
Women.
There's multiple people in the band, but I think we're all, in our own way, a front man or woman. And
good one. Brownie points.
We're very theatrical, I think, and I think everybody has it. I mean, whether it's we put our hair down, we rock and roll, or Patty will get around, I'll be on my drum, and she'll play
everyone.
Spoons on my head
yeah.
and shoulders.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah.
Well, you guys will be performing at Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. Yes. Have you played there before?
We played there last year when, what was it, the Rogue was there. Mm-hmm. I think they turned into the Phoenix
it
now.
Is.
We played at the Phoenix about a week or two ago with John Henry and friends and Alassa.
Mm-hmm.
They're from Lawrence, Kansas. But
had
we
them
played
on the show recently.
Yes,
yeah.
I know.
They're great.
So we played there when it was the Rogue last year. We play at Bear's Place over on 15th Street.
Mm-hmm.
But this is our first time on the main stage, and we're freaking
pumped,
excited.
Yeah. Yeah. We're gonna kick it off. I think we're actually the first band of the entire festival.
So.
The
Roots
Americana night, Wednesday night. Yep.
I also want to throw a quick shout out to Joe Giles that's throwing this massive party rally.
Mm-hmm.
And he came and saw us out at Bear's Place out on 15th and was like, hey, I really want you guys to come and do this. And it's been just incredibly easy working with him.
Yeah.
And he also has a pretty good band too, Joe Giles and the Home Wreckers. So yeah, we so want to say thanks to him for having us.
We're
really excited
about
it.
Yeah.
You guys brought some instruments. You want to play something for me?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we'd love to.
Got
that.
Some stuff to do for sure.
This is called The Bottle Man. Four.
was Melissa Schock, Alan Swearingen, Patrick Calloway, Patty Steele, Chris Crivella, and Christian Jerry inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Together, they are Foley's Van, and they will kick off music on the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue main stage at 4 o'clock next Wednesday afternoon as part of Country and Roots Night. More information about the festival is available at bikesbluesandbbq.org. For more information on the band, you can visit facebook.com/Foley's Van.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we have a name brand interview with Samantha Fish. She has a new album out, Black Wind Howlin'. She plays in Fayetteville twice next week. And when she was in the studio, she played a few acoustic tunes. That's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The AMP, Arkansas Music Pavilion, presents Vampire Weekend with guest Sky Fiera Wednesday, September 25th. This foursome from New York City is frequently featured on NPR's music scene, including First Listen and Live in Concert. Tickets and more information at amptickets.com or 443-5600.
The University of Arkansas and Theater Squared are offering free tickets to school groups to attend a performance of A Christmas Carol in December or Hamlet in April of 2014. Students attending will be asked to complete a survey for research being done by the Department of Education Reform. The request deadline is October 1st. Request forms are available at theater2.org. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Jasper.
Jasper!
Yes.
County seat of Newton County.
Mm-hmm.
You went to see Lynyrd Skynyrd at the AMP last night.
I did. It was a good time.
Yep.
I'm glad I went.
Did they do Freebird?
They did Freebird.
Did they do Freebird for the encore?
They did do Freebird
did
for the encore.
Did you yell for Freebird?
I absolutely yelled for Freebird.
Yeah, a girl. I went to Chefs in the Garden, Botanical Garden.
How was it?
It was fantastic. Congratulations to Cafe Rue Orleans for getting the most votes.
Oh, good for them.
The shrimp and grits.
It's one of those events I need to do. I always mean, I mean, it's got food. What do I not like about food? I mean,
there you go.
I'd already planned on going to Skynyrd.
Good people, good weather, good food.
Excellent.
And a good venue, a ready-made venue.
Mm-hmm.
And the DJ, I don't know what her name was, but she was fantastic. So if she's listening, great job. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Renee Hayda.
Christina Thomas will join me Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. You're by yourself on Monday.
I am.
Thank you, Antoinette.
Have a good weekend.